Om Jnanadhimadannasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Dhena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
So happy to see all of you this morning, and welcome to everyone who's joined us online. Hare Krishna. We're all safe now because we take shelter of the transcendental sound. Otherwise, there's no safety in the material world. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam recommends Samashitaye Parapalava Palavam Mahatparam punya yasho mararehe bhavambure vatsapadam parampadam padam padam yadvipadam natesham. That Krishna is the killer of the Mura demon. He killed so many demons. He just nonchalantly killed Keshi, put his hand in his mouth and inflated it and threw him aside. Aristasura, who is feared by the demigods, even the big powerful devas were afraid of Aristasura. And Krishna just took him like a wet rag. This is up too high, a little too much gain. And he wrung him out, threw him away. Insignificantly killed him, nonchalantly. And Kamsa, feared by everyone, Krishna just pounded him and he was finished. So Krishna can kill all the demons, and therefore... And he's the shelter of the entire cosmic manifestation. Samasritaye parapalava plavam. And his lotus feet are very beautiful. He's very kind and gentle for his devotees. And he's the killer of the demons. He's the shelter of the entire universe. Andantarasta paramanu chayantarastam. He's all-pervading. He's within every atom. He's within the heart of every living being. He controls everything. And at the same time, he gives freedom to the living entities to do as they wish. Surrender or not, it's up to them. So Bhagavatam says, take shelter there, and not in the place where there's danger at every step. Padam padam yad vipadam. Vipadam means, whoops, it happened again. Now I took a misstep. One little prick from a thorn on a rose, my gardener was telling me. And he almost died. A few hours later, there was a red line going up his arm, blood poisoning, and some weird bacteria got in his bloodstream, and he was in the hospital for 7 days, clinging to life. And one pinprick in this material world, and you can be finished. It doesn't take getting hit by a Chevy van. You can be killed at any time. And a friend of ours was telling how her son just came back from Costa Rica after a vacation. 2 weeks later, he had dengue fever, which is very dangerous. You can die at any time from that. One little mosquito bite. So material world is danger at every step. Kamala dala jala jivanantalamala. We're hanging on here like the drop of water on the lotus leaf. And if you ever watch that, it's sort of... wavers back and forth at any time. Whoop, it just slips right off. So we can slip off at any time. Therefore, we should take full advantage of the... We are taking full advantage of the shelter that Krishna's given. And especially, as I mentioned, we're safe now because we're here to take shelter of Krishna's holy name and also the authorized vibrations coming from his servitors, have been passed down to us. And by hearing these, we can be rightly motivated. It takes correct motivation to move in a progressive direction here in this material world. If I associate with worldly-minded people and I become affected by them and infected by their ideas and motivations for happiness in the material world, then I'll also try for something which is unattainable and which will simply lead to misery. But if I associate with the devotees who are sat, that is, they're fixed on serving Krishna and going back home, back to Godhead, then in a similar way, I'll become affected by their association and infected by their desire to give up everything for the sake of serving Krishna. And in that, there's actual eternal happiness, actual eternal progress. There is no plateau. It keeps getting better. Krishna is more and more wonderful, and the life of devotional service is more and more wonderful. There's no point at which one becomes stagnated in spiritual life. Whereas in the material life, it's a constant stagnation because it's only a recycling of everything that's been done before. There's nothing new here in the material world. It just looks new. It's repackaged and recycled and then put back out again with a slightly different thing. In fact, now companies put a little sticker on every thing they recycle. It says new. That's just so you know. This is a new thing. But make no mistake about it. It's not new. It's all been done in before. And it's all just a mixture of these lower modes of material nature, lower elements of material nature, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, ego. We can't enjoy those. They're dead. But when we come in contact with spirit, then we can actually feel some joy, some real happiness. And that we experienced last night for chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra in Palo Alto. We just stood there on the street corner and chanted. More and more devotees gathered. I always like that. We start with a few devotees and then more and more come. It's always interesting when people walk by and they see two of us chanting and they think, oh, what's this little thing? And then they come back later and it's like a flock has come. And they think, well, everyone's joining this. Maybe I should join also. But it's impressive. You can't deny the holy name once you walk by. You may try to walk by more quickly or cover your ears, whatever, but there's something, it gets in you, and you can't deny it. There's a feeling, you can see on people's faces there, what was that? what was that sound? It's not like anything else you've heard. And I saw a group of young high school girls, high school age girls yesterday. They were down the street listening. And they're sort of, spontaneously dancing to the sound, sort of in a mocking way, as a lot of people do, because, you know, what else can they do? But they have to move to it. And one of them was going like this. And I was thinking, that's right. That's the way you should do it. And I saw in Toronto one time when we were chanting on the street, and one young woman came up, and she started doing this too, this like really exotic. Although she was very sincere about it. She wasn't mocking or anything like that. But it just seems to be like a natural mudra. When people hear the sound, it's like, it's something exotic, divine. Maybe I should do this and dance like that. And everyone's affected. People driving by, they honk their horns and they wave and so forth. And because they're carried away by an enjoying spirit, they take it in a lighthearted way. And the damage is done. It goes in. No matter how they take it, it's in. And the holy name always has its effect, always has his effect. Apanasam sritim goran yannama vivisho granan tata sadyo vimucheta yabhi peti swayam payam. Even if chanted unconsciously, it will have, Krishna's name has its effect on the living entity. So today we're going to hear from the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, a section which is especially important to us, which are the teachings of Lord Chaitanya to Srila Rupa Goswami. And I'm going to read through certain sections and then focus on others. Read through, I mean, to get some background on this chapter. And then I'll stop at intervals, time permitting, to go a little deeper. Does that sound okay? Chapter 19 of the Madhya Lila, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructs Srila Rupa Goswami. A summary of this chapter is given by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Amrita Prabhava Bhasha. Meeting Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in a village called Ramakeli, two brothers Rupa and Sanatan began to devise means to get out of their government service. They appointed some brahmanas to perform Kurascharana ceremonies and chant the holy name of Krishna. Srila Rupa Goswami deposited 10,000 gold coins with a grocer, and the balance he brought into two boats to a place called Bala Chandradweep. Bakla Chandradweep. There he divided this money according to There he divided this money among Brahmanas, Vaishnavas, and his relatives, and a portion he kept for emergency measures and personal needs. He was informed that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was going to Vrindavan from Jagannath Puri through the forest of Madhya Pradesh. Therefore, he sent two people to Jagannath Puri to find out when the Lord would leave for Vrindavana. In this way, Rupa Goswami retired, but Sanatana Goswami told the Nawab that he was sick and could not attend to his work. Giving this excuse, he sat at home and studied Srimad Bhagavatam with learned Brahmana scholars. The Nawab Hussein Shah first sent his personal physician to see what the real facts were. Then he personally came to see why Sanatan was not attending to his official business. Knowing that he wanted to resign his post, the Nawab had him arrested and imprisoned. The Nawab then went off to attack Orissa. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started for Vrindavan through the forest of Madhya Pradesh, Charikanda, Rupa Goswami left home and sent news to Sanatan that he was leaving with his younger brother, Anupam Malika, to meet Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Srila Rupa Goswami finally reached Prayag and met with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for 10 successive days. During this time, Balababhata extended an invitation to the Lord with great respect. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu introduced Srila Rupa Goswami to Balababhata. After this, a Brahmana scholar named Raghupati Upadhyaya arrived and discussed Krishna consciousness with the Lord. Kaviraj Goswami then extensively describes the living condition of Sri Rupa and Sanatan at Vrindavan. During the 10 days at Prayag, Srila Rupa Goswami was instructed by the Lord, who gave him the basic principles of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Who here has read the Nectar Devotion?
Reading.
You must read this book. The Lord then sent Srila Rupa Goswami to Vrindavan. The Lord himself returned to Varanasi and stayed at the home of Chandrasekhar. Vrindavaniyam rasakeli vartam kalina luptam nijashakti muktaha sancharya rupe vyatunot punaksa prabhur vidhau pragiva loka shrishtim. Before the creation of this cosmic manifestation, the Lord enlightened the heart of Lord Brahma with the details of the creation and manifested the Vedic knowledge. In exactly the same way, the Lord, being anxious to revive the Vrindavan pastimes of Lord Krishna, impregnated the heart of Rupa Goswami with spiritual potency. By this potency, Srila Rupa Goswami could revive the activities of Krishna in Vrindavan, activities almost lost to memory. In this way, he spread Krishna consciousness throughout the world. Jai, jai, Sri Chaitanya, jai, Nityananda, jai, Dvaita Chandra, jai, Gaura, Bhakta Brinda. All glories to Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All glories to Lord Nityananda. All glories to Advaita Chandra. And all glories to all the devotees of the Lord. Sri Rupa Sanatandra He Ramakele Krame, Prabhure Mai Milia Gela Apana Bhavani. After meeting Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the village of Ramakeli, where?
Ramakeli.
The brothers Rupa and Sanatan returned to their homes. Dvibhai bishaya tyagera upaya srujila bhau dhana dhya dvi brahmani varila. The two brothers devised a means whereby they could give up their material activities. For this purpose, they appointed two brahmanas and paid them a large amount of money. The brahmanas performed religious ceremonies and chanted the holy name of Krishna so that the two brothers might attain shelter at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very soon. Purport, Apuryash Charana is a ritualistic ceremony performed under the guidance of an expert spiritual master or a brahmana. It is performed for the fulfillment of certain desires. One rises early in the morning, chants the Hare Krishna mantra, performs archana by the artik ceremony, and worships the deities. These activities are described in Madhya Lila, 15th chapter, verse 108. Can I have that? 15:108. Shirupa gosai tabe naukate bharia apanare ghari oila bhodhana loya. At this time, Sri Rupa Goswami returned home, taking with him large quantities of riches loaded in boats. Srila Rupa Goswami divided the wealth that he brought back home. He gave 50% in charity to Brahmanas and Vaishnavas and 25% to his relatives. Purport. This is a practical example of how one should divide his money and retire from household life. 50% of one's money should be distributed to qualified and pure Brahmanas, pure devotees of the Lord. 25% may be given to family members, and 25% may be kept for personal use in case of emergency. Text 8. He kept one-fourth of his wealth with a respectable Brahmana. He kept this for his personal safety because he was expecting some legal complications. He deposited 10,000 coins, which were later spent by Sri Sanatan Goswami in the custody of a local Bengali grocer. Yeah?
Regarding this distribution of the wealth, which Prabhupada brings up many times, doesn't it depend upon the how much wealth that person has? For example, in the case of Rupa Goswami, he is very rich. And if he kept 25%, that is still a very large amount of money.
Actually, Kolavecha Sridhar, Prabhupada mentions in the Nectar of Devotion, had practically no wealth because he sold banana, you know, the core of the banana tree, kola root. And although he only earned a few paisa every day, he still divided it up. He gave 50% for the worship of Mother Ganga and like that, so... So no, it doesn't matter. And really, you know, if you start when you're not making that much, it's a lot easier when you start getting really wealthy to keep dividing it up. But even nowadays, very progressive and very, you know, people are very progressive about making, you know, a living and right livelihood and things like that. They all advocate, you know, start early and give away your wealth in a regulated way. Don't try to keep it all, but put, you know, like they say, tithing. Tithing actually means to give a tenth of your wealth. That's what the word tithe means, a tenth. And so this concept is there in most circles. Okay? You seem to be doing pretty good on that. Sri Rupa Goswami heard that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had returned to Jagannath Puri and was preparing to go to Vrindavan through the forest. Sri Rupa Goswami sent two people to Jagannath Puri to find out when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would depart for Vrindavan. Sri Rupa Goswami told the two men, "You are to return quickly and let me know when he will depart. Then I will make the proper arrangements." So Rupa Goswami heard that Mahaprabhu had returned to Jagannath Puri, and that after that he was going to go to Vrindavan through the forest. So Rupa Goswami sent two people to Jagannath Puri to find out when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would depart for Vrindavan. And so it took a little more endeavor those days to find out how people were moving around, and no phone or internet, and it's long distances. Messengers would have to go and so forth. Sri Rupa Goswami told the two men, "You are to return quickly and let me know when he will depart. Then I will make the proper arrangements." While Sanatan Goswami was in Gaudadesh, he was thinking, "The Nawab is very pleased with me. I certainly have an obligation. If the Nawab somehow or other becomes angry with me, I shall be greatly relieved. That is my conclusion." On the pretext of bad health, Sanatan Goswami remained home. Thus he gave up government service and did not go to the royal court. The greedy masters of his clerical and secretarial staff performed the government duties while Sanatan personally remained home and discussed the revealed scriptures. Purport. Sanatan Goswami was the minister in charge of the government secretariat, and his assistants, the undersecretaries and clerks, all belonged to the Kayasta community. Formerly, the Kayastas belonged to the clerical and secretarial staff of the government. And later, if one served in such a post, he was called Kayasta. Eventually, if a person could not identify himself as a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra, he used to introduce himself as a Kayasta to get a wealthy and honorable position. In Bengal, it is said that if one cannot give the identity of his caste, he calls himself a Kayasta. On the whole, the Kayasta community is a mixture of all castes, and it especially includes those engaged in clerical or secretarial work. Materially, such people are always busy occupying responsible government posts. When Sanatan Goswami was relaxing and feeling inclined to retire from government service, many Kayastas on his secretarial staff were very eager to occupy his post. In this regard, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur states that when Sanatan Goswami was a government minister and the Kayastas who assisted him saw that he was reluctant to continue, they became very expert in their duties. Sanatan Goswami was a Brahmana belonging to the Saraswat Brahmana community. It is said that when he resigned, a subordinate named Purandara Khan, who was a Kayasta, occupied his post. Bhattacharya Pandit Bish Trish Loye Bhagavata Vichar Karina Shubhate Bishai Vashya. Sri Sanatan Goswami used to discuss Srimad Bhagavatam in an assembly of 20 or 30 learned Brahmana scholars. Purport. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives the following commentary on the words Bhagavat Vichar, as confirmed in the Mundaka Upanishad 1.1.4-5, there are two kinds of educational systems. Quote, there are two kinds of educational systems. One deals with transcendental knowledge, paravidya, and the other with material knowledge, aparavidya. All the Vedas, the Rig Veda, Yajurveda, Samaveda, and Atharvaveda, along with their corollaries, known as Shiksha, Kalpa, Vyakarana, Nirukta, Chanda, and Jyotish, belong to the inferior system of material knowledge, aparavidya. By paravidya, one can understand the akshara, Brahman, or the absolute truth. As far as the Vedic literature is concerned, the Vedanta Sutra is accepted as the paravidya. Srimad Bhagavatam is an explanation of that paravidya. Those who aspire for liberation, mukti or moksha, and introduce themselves as Vaidantika, are also equal to those groups aspiring to improve religion, dharma, economic development, artha, and sense gratification, kama. Dharma, artha, kama, and moksha are called chaturvarga. Chaturvarga. They are all within the system of inferior material knowledge. Any literature giving information about the spiritual world, spiritual life, spiritual identity, and the spirit soul is called paravidya. Srimad Bhagavatam does not have anything to do with the materialistic way of life. It gives transcendental information to educate people in the superior system of paravidya. Sanatana Goswami was engaged in discussing the Bhagavad Vidya, which means he discussed transcendental superior knowledge. Those who are karmis, jnanis, or yogis are not actually fit to discuss Srimad Bhagavatam. Only Vaishnavas or pure devotees are fit to discuss that literature. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam itself, 12.13.18, Srimad Bhagavatam Puranam Amalam Yad Vaishnavanam Priyam Yasmin Paramahamsyam Ekam Amalam Jnanam Param Giyate Yatra Jnana Viraga Bhakti Sahitam Naishkarmyam Avishkritam Chachrindvan Supatan Vicharana Paro Bhaktya Vimunchina Naraha. Although Srimad Bhagavatam is counted among the Puranas, it is called the Spotless Purana. Called what?
Spotless Purana.
Because it does not discuss anything material. It is liked by the transcendental Vaishnava devotees. Because it doesn't discuss anything material. Devotees don't like to discuss anything material. The subject matter found in Srimad Bhagavatam is meant for Paramahamsas. As it is said, Paramo nirmat saranam satam vedyam. A Paramahamsa is one who does not live in the material world and who does not envy others. What are the two characteristics of a Paramahamsa? Does not live in the material world and... How's that possible? How is it that one doesn't live in the material world, even though walking around here? You have an answer?
By engaging in the service of Guru and Krishna through thoughts, words, and actions.
You have a Sanskrit? You got some Sanskrit for us? A little praman? That proves somebody who is engaged in serving Guru and Sadhu and Shastra is not of this material world.
Like Prabhupada did that.
But I want some Sanskrit.
He's got one verse. But I don't have Sanskrit. I can say the English translation.
Well, if you can do that, then we can trace out the Sanskrit.
Okay. The English translation is that... slightly related but exactly not the same. What is considered to be day for a transcendentalist is nighttime for the worldly beings, and what is considered day for the worldly people is nighttime for transcendentalist. In other words, it's saying that the business that the worldly people are in, that the transcendentalist is not aware of that, and that whatever business that transcendentalist is engaged in, the worldly people are not aware of that.
And where is this verse found?
This is in Bhagavad Gita.
Which chapter? Make that verse your life and soul today.
Okay.
Look it up, memorize it, find out everything you can about it.
Okay.
Yes.
This is the verse.
Good citation, by the way. Go ahead.
This is the verse from Bhagavatam 9:4:19 that talks about how Ambarish Maharaj did this. Mukundalinga.
Page
245 in Shloka book.
Go ahead.
Mukundalinga laya darshane trishau tat britya gatra sparshe anga sangamam grina. Granam chatat pada saroja saurabe Srimat tulasya rasanam tadarpite. Maharaja Ambarisha engaged his eyes in seeing the deity of Krishna, Krishna's temples and Krishna's places like Mathura and Vrindavan. He engaged his sense of touch in touching the bodies of the Lord's devotees. He engaged his sense of smell in smelling the fragrance of tulsi offered to the Lord. And he engaged his tongue in tasting Lord's prasad. That's
very nice.
How Paramahamsa does.
Okay. Yes. Mukharavind.
This is a verse from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, page number 397.
Okay.
Iha yasya hareda se karmana manasa gira nikilas apyavasthasu jivan muktasa uchyate. Translation: one who engages in the transcendental service of the Lord in body, mind, and word is to be considered liberated in all conditions of material existence.
Good. Very good. Yes.
Bhagavad Gita 9.27. Yat karoshi yadad dasi yad jhosi dadasi yat. Yat tapasyati kontaya tat kurusha madarpanam. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, and whatever austerities you perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering to me.
That's an instruction, but it doesn't prove that somebody's transcendental by doing it. The last verse given by Mukharavind directly states that if you're engaging your body, mind, words in the service of the Lord, then you're considered iha, even in this world, even in this body, you're considered to be mukta. Jivan mukta means Although you're a jiva, you're involved with the material energy, you're mukta at the same time. That's the most direct proof so far. Go ahead.
So those who are engaged in devotional service to the Lord without any stoppage, then they transcend the modes of material nature and they are situated on a transcendental platform.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I was thinking of one verse that Krishna says, like manmana bhava mad bhakto. He says like, he devotee who always thinks of me, does service to me, is very dear to me. I don't know what that tells, but he tells like these people who always think about me, do service to me, are very dear.
He advises that always think of me. It's another order, always think of me. And then say that way, you know, become my devotee, worship me, bow down to me, and this way you'll definitely come to me. Yeah, that's nice.
One more from Srimad Bhagavatam.
All right, go ahead.
This is Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.37. Shravan Krinam Samsmaryam Chachintyan Namni Rupani Chamangalani Te Kriyasu Yastvach Charna Ravindayor Avesht Chetana Bhavaya Kalpate.
Page number?
Page verse 251, and I'm reading the translation, which is in 252. This is prayers by the demigod for Lord Krishna in Devaki's womb. Even while engaged in various activities, devotees whose minds are completely absorbed at your lotus feet and who constantly hear, chant, contemplate, and cause others to remember your transcendental names and forms are always on the transcendental platform, and thus they can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
That's very practical. Kriyasa yatach charanada vindayo. In that verse, in the purport of that verse, Prabhupada actually says that our main business in the Krishna conscious movement is the distribution of transcendental literature. And that by doing that, one is practically in samadhi, because one's distributing Krishna's book. You have one last one, Gandharvika? Oh, yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. This is from the Dhyan Yoga. So this is chapter 6, 28. It says, Yunjanevam sadatmanam yogi vigata kalmasha sukhena brahma samparsham samparsham atyantam sukham ashnate. So it says that the self-controlled yogi constantly engaged in yogic practice becomes free from all material contamination and achieves the highest state of perfect happiness in transcendental loving service to the Lord. So I found that by concentrating, by undertaking the practice of yoga, bhakti yoga, and following it with a proper focused mind, one can transcend to the material modes. So though he is in the material world, he's not contaminated by anything material.
Okay, good citation. How did you remember that one?
I didn't remember it, but I was searching for his sloka and I landed on it. Okay, this is perfect.
Krishna directed you. And then of course in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which is very much about how one karma sannyas yoga, means you're performing karma, but at the same time you're detached from the work itself. And Krishna describes how even though you're working, you're in a liberated state. And he talks about the condition of a person in divine consciousness. Naiva kinshit karo miti. This is fifth chapter, text number 7 and 8. Naiva kinchit karomiti yukto manyita tatvavit. Is it 7 and 8? 8 and 9. Pashan shrinvan sprishan jigran ashnan gachan sopan shrasan. Pralapan vishrajan grinnan unmishan nimishan napi. Indriyan indriyateshu vartanta iti dharayan. Person of divine consciousness. Although engaged in eating, sleeping. No. What? What is the translation?
A person in the divine consciousness, although engaged in seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, eating, moving about, sleeping and breathing, always knows within himself that he actually does nothing at all. Because while speaking, evacuating, receiving or opening or closing his eyes, he always knows that only the material senses are engaged with their objects and that he is aloof from them.
Beautiful. Good verse. And then we get to the point of being non-envious. So the world, material world, is pervaded by envy. What is envy anyway? The inability to tolerate the eminence of another. We can't tolerate when someone else is doing well, or shows or shines. And so, what is that? Acknowledges of others' progress, but in a negative way. So this envy, one becomes. Krishna talks about how when a living entity turns away from his service, then he becomes full of fear, and he's in a contrary state of consciousness. And that means that he becomes Krishna's competitor. And he becomes a competitor of all other living entities also. But if one considers that I'm the servant of Krishna and becomes just the humble servitor, and at that point also, one is no longer inclined to envy other living entities as well, because one steps out of the center and trying to prove oneself to be the best or to be the supreme. And from that position, it's very much there's no requirement for one to actually compete with others in a negative way, as you were explaining. And through the process of devotional service, one becomes detached from the material activities and from the material body and sense and so forth, and also becomes free from envy. This coveted position is called Paramahamsa. One lives in the material world, but is wholly unaffected by anything in the material world, any of the material effects. No envy, and no... He doesn't live in the material world, and he does not envy others. Continuing, in Srimad Bhagavatam, devotional service is discussed to arouse the living entity to the transcendental position of jnana, knowledge, and vairagya, renunciation. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.12, tach chadadhana munayo jnana vairagya yuktaya pashyantya manichatmanam bhaktit shuta grihitaya. The seriously inquisitive student or sage, well equipped with knowledge and detachment, realizes that absolute truth by rendering devotional service in terms of what he has heard from the Vedanta Shruti. This is not sentiment. Knowledge and renunciation can be obtained through devotional service. Bhaktya Shruta Grihitaya. Please look up that verse and see the word-for-word meaning in Bhaktya Shruta Grihitaya. That is, by arousing one's dormant devotional consciousness, Krishna consciousness. When Krishna consciousness is aroused, it relieves one from fruit of activity for economic improvement and material enjoyment. Did you hear that? I'll say it again. When Krishna consciousness is aroused, it relieves one from fruit of activity for economic improvement and material enjoyment. It's a relief. Those are afflictions. The relief is technically called naishkarmya. And when one is relieved, he is no longer interested in working hard for sense gratification. Srimad Bhagavatam is Srila Vyasadeva's last mature contribution, and one should read and hear it in an assembly of realized souls while engaging in devotional service. At such a time, one can be liberated from all material bondage. This was the course taken by Sanatan Goswami, who retired from government service to study Srimad Bhagavatam with learned scholars. That is the solution. Invest more and more time in the process of hearing and chanting. Bhaktya Shruta Grihitaya means?
Bhaktya means in devotional service. Srut the Vedas. Grihitaya, well received.
Well received. Bhaktya Shruta Grihita. Prabhupada says there's knowledge and renunciation can be obtained through devotional service. Bhaktya Shruta Grihitaya. Okay, continuing, text 18. While Sanatana Goswami was studying Srimad Bhagavatam in the assembly of learned brahmanas, one day the Nawab of Bengal and another person suddenly appeared. Purport, the full name of Nawab of Bengal, Hussein Shah, was... Alauddina Saidya Hussein Shah Srepa Maka. And he ruled Bengal for 23 years, from 1420 to 1443, Shikabdi era. That's AD 1498 to 1521. Sanatan Goswami was studying Srimad Bhagavatam with the scholars in the year 1424, AD 1502. As soon as all the brahmanas and Sanatan Goswami saw the Nawab appear, they all stood up and respectfully gave him a sitting place to honor him. Purport, although Nawab Hussein Shah was Mlecha Yavana, he was nonetheless the governor of the country. And the learned scholars and Sanatan Goswami offered him all the respect due to a king or a governor. When a person occupies an exalted executive post, one should consider that he has acquired the grace of the Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita 10:41, Krishna says, Yad yad vibhuti mat sattvam srimad urjitam eva va tat tad eva vagachcha tvam mama tenchomsha sambhavam. Know that all opulent, beautiful, and glorious creations spring but from a spark of my splendor. Whenever we see something exalted, we must consider it part of the power of the personality of Godhead. A powerful man, vibhuti mat sattvam, is one who has obtained the grace of the Lord or has derived some power from him. In the Bhagavad Gita 7:10, Krishna says, Tejas Tejas Vinamaham, I am the power of the powerful. The learned Brahmana scholars showed respect to Nawab Hussein Shah because he represented a fraction of Krishna's power. It's very instructive, isn't it? That Tejas Tejas Vinamaham means that when you see some extraordinary quality in a person, even it may be engaged in a materialistic way, one can see Krishna in that this person has attained this position, this genius, this physical ability by the grace of Krishna, and therefore one remains Krishna conscious. So one can see Krishna everywhere. 20. The Nawab said, I sent my physician to you, and he has reported that you are not diseased. As far as he could see, you are completely healthy. I'm depending on you to carry out so many of my activities, but you have given up your governmental duties to sit here at home. You have spoiled all my activities. What is your intention? Please tell me frankly. Sanatan Goswami replied, you can no longer expect any service from me. Please arrange for someone else to tend to the management. It's nice to reverse it for a change. Usually people get to their office and they're fired and they just tell them at the last minute, get your stuff and go, and there's a security guard to see you out. It's nice to hear, like, okay, the boss is fired and I'm leaving. Becoming angry with Sanatan Goswami, the Nawab said, your elder brother is acting just like a plunderer. By killing many living entities, your elder brother has destroyed all Bengal. Now you are destroying all my plans. Sanatan Goswami said, you are the supreme ruler of Bengal and are completely independent. Whenever someone commits a fault, you punish him accordingly. Hearing this, the Nawab of Bengal stood up and returned to his home. He ordered the arrest of Sanatan Goswami so that he would not be able to leave. Purport. Pardon me?
Who is elder brother referred here?
Who is what?
Elder brother.
Sanatan? It is said that the relationship between the Nawab of Bengal and Sanatan Goswami was very intimate. The Nawab used to consider Sanatan Goswami his younger brother. And when Sanatan Goswami showed a very strong intention to resign, the Nawab, feeling familial affection, essentially said, I am your elder brother, but I do not look after the state management. My only business is attacking other states with my soldiers and fighting everywhere as a plunderer. Because I am a meat eater, Yavana, I am used to hunting all kinds of living beings. In this way, I am destroying all kinds of living entities in Bengal. While engaged in this destructive business, I am hoping that you will tend to the administration of the state. Since I, your elder brother, am engaged in such destructive business. You, being my younger brother, should look after the state management. If you do not, how will things continue? This talk was based on a family relationship, and Sanatan Goswami also replied in an intimate and joking way. Essentially, he told the Nawab, my dear brother, you are the independent ruler of Bengal. You can act in whatever way you like. And if someone commits a fault, you can punish him accordingly. In other words, Sanatan Goswami was saying that since the Nawab was accustomed to acting like a plunderer, he should go ahead and take action. Since Sanatan was not showing much enthusiasm for performing his duty, the Nawab should dismiss him from his service. The Nawab could understand the intentions of Sanatan Goswami's statement. He therefore left in an angry mood and ordered Sanatan Goswami's arrest. This is important to also note that everyone has some complexities in the material world. These great liberated souls who come and play a role in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes show by example that everyone starts from an entangled situation. It's not that... you can think of Shukadeva Goswami. He did his best to avoid anything. He didn't want to come out of the womb. When he did, he ran away from home. He wouldn't even take the sacred thread from his father, Vyasadeva. That's how loath a realized soul is to get involved in the material world. And practically speaking, anyone who comes into this world there are combinations and permutations of difficulties and complexities for which to get out. But the answer is always the same. The process is always the same. From where you are now, engage in hearing and chanting and doing and rendering service properly, and Krishna will help to disentangle you from these complexities, and gradually one will come to the point of being able to engage in full-time devotional service. Yes?
Prabhuji, this question related to the previous point, which you mentioned, that if you see something, that tejas, that verse, if you see something wonderful, even from a material perspective, in a person, you should see that it is because of Krishna's grace. So here I had, the question was that, particularly in India, we see this cricket players or these movie stars, people are crazy about them. And personally, I was actually frustrated when I used to see these cricketers saying, what a waste of time. Or at least the movie stars, I used to be angry when they were actually respected in social circles, and thinking that why are people so crazy about such people? It's such a waste of time. Like this. So is that a good way of thinking at all? Because it's kind of contradictory to this particular explanation, right? Where they
could be angry and frustrated with the fact that people are in ignorance and want to help them. And that kind of admiration that people have for movie stars and sports stars and things like that, because it doesn't have any relationship to Krishna, it's Maya. It's not that because they, somebody appreciates Mick Jagger or any names from India these days, I'm sorry. Although I saw some cricket player just retired recently who was famous. What was his name?
Tendulkar. Sachin Tendulkar.
Sachin what?
Tendulkar.
Sachin Tenduja.
Tendulkar?
Sachin Tendulkar. I saw it when I was at the airport in somewhere. Where was I? I can't even remember. International airport, because otherwise they wouldn't have shown cricket. And they were making a big thing out of this. And to me, when I look at cricket, I go, what the heck is that? It looks so ludicrous, like grown men acting all serious about throwing a ball. It's like, didn't you grow up or something like that? But of course, that's the way sports are, but if you grew up with the sport, then you think it's a big deal. Like with baseball, I can relate to it, but cricket, it just looks like grown men acting infantile. But I noticed that he was he was retiring, and then I saw it was on the paper and everything in the plane. It was like a big deal. And people even had shirts with his picture on it and said, "God's never retire," or something like that. And you know who he was? Yeah.
I was getting my apartment fixed, and my apartment has below is a hotel. And as soon as you walk in, it's just like about this Tendulkar getting some famous award of India, the one of the best award. And the Vrindavan, actually that neighborhood, everyone was talking about that. And I was also feeling like a little disgusted about it's like, where am I at? I had to check at one point.
I'm in the Dom. So those, that kind of admiration or appreciation is maya. Why? Ritirtam yat pratyeta na pratyeta chatmani tadvidyarat manomhayam yatabhaso yatatamaha. If you don't see the connection to Krishna, then it's maya. Krishna says this to Brahma. It's the one of the original verses of the Bhagavatam in which he says, anything that you see that doesn't have a relationship to me. Now, catch this, because everything has a relation, Krishna. But anything you see that doesn't have a relationship to me, know that to be my illusory potency, maya. This is in the second canto. Rityartam yat pratyeta na pratyeta chatmani tadvidyarat manomayam yatabhasho yatatamah. It's just a reflection. So as soon as one sees the connection to Krishna, so whatever it may be, you may see Sachin Kotak and say, oh, you know, this kind of admiration people have for him is a perverted reflection of, you know, what they have for Krishna. You can start to see the symptoms. This is natural in the soul to admire a hero and whatever kind of ability he had throughout his career, that was coming from Krishna also. And you can think, you know, in terms of that, and then it becomes productive. Then you can actually see it in relationship. But your question was, is it appropriate to become angry with ignorance? Well, there's a story about Prabhupada observing some golfers and how he actually became physically affected, that he you know, he shed a tear. And when his servant asked him about it, he felt bad that they had attained such a rare human life, and there they were, you know, taking it so seriously, knocking a ball around into a hole and so forth, and that they're wasting his time. So he felt, he saw the urgency of their mission in life, and that it was just being squandered completely, and therefore he felt sad for them. So there are some emotions like that, or one may, you know, sort of feel angry at that one hasn't been able to be effective at overcoming the powers of material illusion and so forth, and that you want to help people. Okay?
But we shouldn't think, right, like, okay, this Sachin is now favored by Krishna, so he is also, I mean, definitely not Krishna, but so I should respect him. That should not be our...
No, we should see in relationship, you know, all this drum and drung about Sachin Kotak is maya. It's just maya because, you know, he hits a ball around or whatever he does, catches it, throws it. I don't know what he does, but something he did something in the scheme of the whole, I mean, not to be blasphemous here, but in the scheme of the causing manifestation, it's laughable. It's insignificant, really. And, you know, and all of that is, you know, if he was from Pakistan, people in India probably wouldn't have honored him so much. I mean, if it's from a different team or something like that. It's all about the ego, false ego. He's our guy. You know, people identify with them and they do hero worship in the material world.
It's to such a perverse degree that there are quotations saying that cricket is a religion and Sachin is God.
But that's true. It is. And that's the nature of the soul to become, you know, dedicated to something with that kind of passion. And therefore, we see these verses where Rupa Goswami says, just as a young boy is attracted to a young girl, and young girls attracted to no education necessary. They just like, how are you? All right, all right, you go that way, you go. You know, that is, he said, in the same way, let my attraction be drawn to you. And then he said, just as a lover is waiting for a love letter, and when it comes, his hands are shaking, and his voice becomes unsteady when he's reading it, let me also read Srimad Bhagavatam in that way. So these things are to be seen, as Krishna explains in the beginning of the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, about this is a reflection. So if you can see it in relationship to that, the same kind of hero worship and all these kinds of things, that's meant for Krishna. That energy is being diverted in a different way, that's all. It's not satisfying. I mean, people worshipped, who was that guy who won all the Tour de France so many times?
Lance Armstrong.
You know, people wore Lance Armstrong t-shirts and the wristband and all that kind of stuff for years, and then it turned out he was a big cheater. And that happens all the time in the material world. But people are, but you can see that it's the tendency of everyone to want to have that kind of hero and worship the hero. So it's perfectly reposed in Krishna, because he'll never cheat and he'll never let anyone down. He's worthy. He can take all that. We can repose that kind of worship propensity in Krishna, and it never becomes diminished. He's never diminished. He's only increasing, and we become satisfied. That's why Krishna says, Bhoktaram yajna tapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suridam sarvabhutanam gyatvamam shantim richti. You want peace? He said, then repose all that tendency you have for cricket players and everybody else in me, and then you'll become actually satisfied. Then you'll become actually satisfied. And when it's diverted to everyone, all these other things, without seeing its relationship to Krishna, then it's just Maya. And if you engage in Maya, then you'll become dissatisfied. Beware of Maya. She will hit you, she will hurt you. It's the lyrics from George Harrison's song. Sanatan Goswami replied, you are going to Orissa to give pain to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For this reason, I am powerless to go with you. The Nawab again arrested Sanatan Goswami and kept him in prison. At this time, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu departed for Vrindavan from Jagannath Puri. The two persons who went to Jagannath Puri to inquire about the Lord's departure returned and informed Rupa Goswami that the Lord had already departed for Vrindavan. Upon receiving this message from his two messengers, Rupa Goswami immediately wrote a letter to Sanatan Goswami saying that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had departed for Vrindavan. In his letter to Sanatan Goswami, Srila Rupa Goswami wrote, we two brothers are starting out to go see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You must also somehow or other get released and come meet us. Purport, the two brothers herein mentioned are Rupa Goswami and his younger brother, Anupam Malik. Rupa Goswami was informing Sanatan Goswami that he should join him and his younger brother. Rupa Goswami further informed Srila Sanatan Goswami, I have left a deposit of 10,000 coins with the grocer. Use that money to get out of prison. Somehow or other, get yourself released and come to Vrindavan. After writing this, the two brothers, Rupa Goswami and Anupam, went to see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Rupa Goswami's younger brother was a great devotee whose actual name was Sri Balabha, but he was given the name Anupam Malik. Sri Rupa Goswami and Anupam Malik went to Prayag, and they were very pleased to hear the news that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was there. At Prayag, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to see the temple of Bindu Madhava, and many hundreds of thousands of people followed him just to meet him. Some of the people following the Lord were crying, some were laughing, some dancing, and some chanting. Indeed, some of them were rolling on the ground exclaiming, Krishna, Krishna. Prayag is located at the confluence of two rivers, Ganga and Jamuna. Although these rivers were not able to flood Prayag with water, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu inundated the whole area with waves of ecstatic love for Krishna. Seeing the great crowd, the two brothers remained standing in a secluded place. they could see that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was ecstatic to see Lord Bindu Madhava. The Lord was loudly chanting the holy name of Hari, dancing in ecstatic love and raising his arms. He asked everyone to chant, Hari, Hari. Everyone was astounded to see the greatness of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Indeed, I cannot properly describe the pastimes of the Lord at Prayag. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had made an acquaintance with a brahmana from Deccan in South India, and that brahmin invited him for meals and took him to his place. While Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was sitting in a solitary place in the home of that Deccan brahmana, Rupa Goswami and Sri Balabha Anupam Malik came to meet him. Seeing the Lord from a distance, the two brothers put two clumps of straw between their teeth and immediately fell down on the ground like rods, offering obeisances. Both brothers were overwhelmed with ecstatic emotion, and reciting various Sanskrit verses, they stood up and fell down again and again. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very pleased to see Srila Rupa Goswami, and he told him, stand up, my dear Rupa, come here. Go ahead. You had a comment? Okay. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then said, it is not possible to describe Krishna's mercy, for he has delivered you both from the well of material enjoyment. Lord Krishna said, even though a person is a very learned scholar of the Sanskrit Vedic literatures, he is not accepted as my devotee unless he is pure in devotional service. Even though a person is born in a family of dog eaters, he is very dear to me if he is a pure devotee who has no motive to enjoy fruitive activities or mental speculation. Indeed, all respects should be given to him, and whatever he offers should be accepted. Such devotees are as worshipable as I am. Purport, this is a verse included in the Hari Bhakti Vilas 10.127, compiled by Sanatan Goswami. 51. After reciting this verse, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced the two brothers and out of his causeless mercy, he placed his feet on their heads. Are you enjoying hearing this?
Yes.
Okay. Prabhu Kripa, poi dhuhe dwe hota judi. Dina hoy shruti kare binai achari. After receiving the Lord's causeless mercy, the two brothers folded their hands and in great humility offered the following prayers unto the Lord. Namo Mahavananaya, Krishna Prema Pradayate, Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya, Namne Gora Tushe Namaha. O most munificent incarnation, you are Krishna himself appearing as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You have assumed the golden color of Srimati Radharani, and you are widely distributing pure love of Krishna. We offer our respectful obeisances unto you. Yog Jnana Matam Bhuvanam Daya Lur Ulod Hayan Apyakarot Pramatam Supremasam Pat Sudayad Bhuteham Sri Krishna Chaitanyam Amum Prapadye. We offer our respectful obeisances unto that merciful Supreme Personality of Godhead who has converted all three worlds which were maddened by ignorance and saved them from their diseased condition by making them mad with the nectar from the treasure house of love of God. Let us take full shelter of that personality of God at Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, whose activities are wonderful. This verse is found in Govinda Lilamrita 1.2. After this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sat them down by his side and asked them, what news do you have of Sanatan? Rupa Goswami replied, Sanatan has now been arrested by the government of Hussein Shah. If you kindly save him, he can be liberated from that entanglement. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu immediately replied, Sanatan has already been released from his confinement, and he will very soon meet with me. The brahmana then requested Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to accept his lunch. Rupa Goswami also remained there that day. Balabhadra Bhattacharya invited the two brothers to take lunch also. The remnants of food from the plate of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were offered to them. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu selected his residence beside the confluence of the Ganges and Jamuna, a place called Triveni. The two brothers, Rupa Goswami and Sri Balabha, selected their residence near the Lord's. At that time, Sri Balabha Bhatta was staying at Adailagram. Where? And when he heard that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had arrived, he went to his place to see him. Purport, Balabha Bhatta was a great learned scholar of Vaishnavism. In the beginning, he was very much devoted to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But since he thought that he could not receive proper respect from him, he later joined the Vishnu Swami sect and became the Acharya of that sect. His sect is celebrated as the Balabhacharya Sampradaya. This Sampradaya has had great influence in Vrindavan near Gokula and in Bombay. Balabha Bhatta wrote many books, including a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam called Subodhanitika and notes on the Vedanta Sutra in the form of an Anubhashya. He also wrote a combination of 16 short works called Sodasha Grantha. The village where he was staying, Adailagram or Adeligram, was near the confluence of the rivers Ganges and Jamuna on the other side of the Jamuna from Prayag, about 1 mile from the river. A temple of Lord Vishnu there still belongs to the Balabha Sampradaya. Balabha Bhatta was originally from a place in southern India called Trailanga. There's a railway station there called Nidhadhapalu. 16 miles from that station is a village called Kangadabad and Kamkundrapadu. A learned Brahmin named Lakshman Dikshita used to live there, and Balabha Bhatta was his son. There are five sections of the Brahmin community of Andhra Pradesh known as Belinati, Veginati, Murakanati, Telugu Nati, Kashalanati. Of these five Brahminical communities, Balabha Bhacharya took his birth in the community of Belinati in the year 1400 Shakabda era. That's AD 1478. According to some people, Balabha Bhattacharya's father took sannyas before Balabha's birth, and he returned home to take Balabhacharya as his son. According to the opinion of others, Balabhacharya was born in 1400 Shakabda era on the Ekadashi day of the dark moon in the month of Chaitra, and he took his birth in a Brahmana family surnamed Kambhapatibharu. According to this account, his father's name was Lakshman Bhadikshika, and he was born in Champakarnya. In someone else's opinion, Balabhacharya appeared near the village named Champajaragram, which is near a railway station named Rajima in Madhya Pradesh. This won't be on the quiz. After studying for 11 years at Varanasi, Balabhacharya returned home. On his return, he heard that his father had departed from the material world. Keeping his brother and mother at home, he went to the banks of the river Tungabhadra to a village called Vidyanagara, where he enlightened Krishnadev, the grandson of King Bukharaj. After that, he traveled throughout India thrice on trips lasting 6 years each. Thus, he passed 18 years and became victorious in his discussions of revealed scripture. When he was 30 years old, he married Mahalakshmi, who belonged to the same Brahmana community as his. Near Govardhan Hill, he established a deity in the valley. Finally, he came to Adila, which is on the other side of the Jamuna from Prayag. Balabhacharya had two sons, Gopinath and Vitaleshvar. And in his old age, he accepted a renounced order. In 1452, Shakabda era, AD 1530, he passed away from the material world at Varanasi. His book, known as Sodasha Grantha, and his commentaries on the Vedanta Sutra Anubhashya and Srimad Bhagavatam Subodhani are very famous. He wrote many other books besides. Good to know about Balabhacharya, right? Yes. 62. Balabha Bhattacharya offered Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's obeisances, and the Lord embraced him. After that, they discussed topics about Krishna for some time. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu felt great ecstatic love when they began discussing Krishna, but the Lord checked his feelings because he felt shy before Balabha Bhatta. Although the Lord restrained himself externally, ecstatic love raged within. There was no checking that. Balabhata was astonished to detect this. Thereafter, Balabhata invited Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for lunch, and the Lord introduced the brothers Rupa and Balabha to him. From a distance, the brothers Rupa Goswami and Sri Balabha fell on the ground and offered obeisances to Balabhata with great humility. When Balabha Bhattacharya walked toward them, they ran away to a more distant place. Rupa Goswami said, "I am untouchable and most sinful. Please do not touch me." Balabha Bhattacharya was very much surprised at this. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, however, was very pleased, and he therefore spoke to him this description of Rupa Goswami. Iho na sparshiha iho jati atihin vaidika jagnika tumi kalina praveen. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Don't touch him, for he belongs to a very low caste. You are a follower of Vedic principles and are well experienced performer of Vedic, of many sacrifices. You also belong to the aristocracy." Purport: generally, Brahmins are puffed up with false prestige because they belong to aristocracy and perform many Vedic sacrifices. In South India especially, this fastidious position is most prominent. At any rate, this was the case 500 years ago. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually started a revolution against this Brahminical system of inaugurating the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. By this chanting, one can be delivered regardless of caste, creed, color, or social position. Whoever chants the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is immediately purified due to the transcendental position of devotional service. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is here hinting to Balabha Bhattacharya that an exalted Brahmana who makes sacrifices and follows Vedic principles should not neglect a person who is engaged in devotional service by chanting the holy name of the Lord. Actually, Rupa Goswami did not belong to a lower caste. He was from a highly aristocratic Brahmana family, but due to his association with the Muslim Nawab, he was considered fallen and was excommunicated from Brahmana society. However, due to his advanced devotional service, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted him as a Goswami. Balabha Bhattacharya knew all this. One who is a devotee is above caste and creed, yet Balabha Bhattacharya felt himself prestigious. The present head of the Balabha Bhattacharya Sampradaya of Bombay is named Dikshit Maharaj. He is very friendly to our movement, and whenever we meet him, this learned Brahmana scholar highly praises the activities of the Hare Krishna movement. He is a life member of our society, and although he is a learned scholar in the Brahminical caste tradition, he accepts our society and considers its members bona fide devotees of Lord Vishnu. 70. Hearing the holy name constantly vibrated by the two brothers, Balabha Bhattacharya could understand the hints of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Balabha Bhattacharya said, "Since these two are constantly chanting the holy name of Krishna, how can they be untouchable? On the contrary, they are most exalted." Purport: Balabha Bhattacharya's admission of the brothers' exalted position should serve as a lesson to anyone who is falsely proud of his position as a Brahmana. Sometimes so-called Brahmanas do not recognize our European and American disciples as devotees or Brahmanas, and some Brahmanas are so proud that they do not allow them to enter temples. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu herein gives a great lesson. Although Balabha Bhattacharya was a great authority on Brahmanism and a learned scholar, he admitted that those who chant the Lord's holy name are bona fide Brahmanas and Vaishnavas, and are therefore exalted. Then he quotes the verse, "Aho bhatashva pachato gariyan yajivagre vartate namatubhyam te pustapaste juhuvu sasnar arya ramanachurnama grananti yete." Balabha Bhattacharya then recited the following verse, "My dear Lord, one who always keeps your holy name on his tongue becomes greater than an initiated Brahman. Although he may be born in a family of dog eaters and may therefore by material calculation be the lowest among men, he is still glorious. This is the wonderful effect of chanting the holy name of the Lord. It is therefore concluded that one who chants the holy name of the Lord should be understood to have performed all kinds of austerities and great sacrifices mentioned in the Vedas." He has already taken his bath in all the holy places of pilgrimage and has studied all the Vedas, and he is actually an Aryan. This verse is quoted from what canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam? Does everyone concur? Mukharvin has that third canto. Who spoke it? Mukharvin, you're exempted from this. Who spoke this verse? Who? Opposite. His mother to Kapila Dev. So she speaks these two verses to Devahuti speaking to Kapila Dev. And everyone should become fully acquainted with the two verses that she spoke, because they're very important and quoted quite frequently throughout Shastra as proving the efficacy of the chanting the holy name of the Lord, and that even those of lower birth who chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra become freed from their prarabdha karma and become qualified as brahmanas simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord. Yes. Gandharvika?
So I hope it's appropriate to ask this question, but sometimes what people say, that Prabhupada made it clear that whoever chants, there is no difference between Americans or Indians. But sometimes what people say, that when compared to other sampradayas, for example, Shi Sampradaya, the fall down rate is very less when compared to ISKCON, especially when they reach to the high levels. So what they say is maybe because the background from which one comes and the family bindings and the teachings that happen at the young age does have the influence, even if one grows up, because maybe our chanting is not very staunch or something like that. So, but we also see within our movement that the fall down rate is
when more. When you're talking about rates, first of all, you're talking it's a mathematical phrase. It's something scientific. And when rates are measured, there must be scientific conditions to measure them in. And so, you know, over what period of time are those in the Ramanuja Sampradaya less likely to fall down from, you know, a certain position? And, I mean, obviously, if the Krishna conscious movement just started and 20-year-olds, 16-year-olds who were picked up off the street and introduced to the process of Krishna consciousness, you know, over a short amount of time, does that correlate scientifically, you know, to a double-blind study of rates? I mean, there's liars, damn liars, and statisticians. And, you know, you could say, well, the rate of this and the rate of that, then, you know, and what does it actually mean, ultimately, has to be looked at. If you're going to use the word rate, you actually have to use it scientifically. Otherwise, it just becomes a biased kind of way to present something. But can somebody who's taken to the process of devotional service and been initiated and, you know, has progressed to a certain level fall back down again? Yes. We have all kinds of incidents, even in the Srimad Bhagavatam. In fact, over and over again we see. There was the case of Bharat Maharaj, after whom India is... you know, named, who was at a very high level, who fell back from devotional service. It's the tendency of the living entity and the material nature to become, you know, influenced by her. But the power of devotional service is so great, says the Shastra, and is pointed out very carefully by Narada Muni, even if someone does fall back, it's not like ordinary people fall back. First of all, there's no loss. They made that much advancement, they'll keep it. And they won't fall back like ordinary people. They'll remember, like, man, I fell back. Why did I do this? I've met devotees who have fallen back from certain situations. I've also met who have come all the way back and more, you know, from a fallen condition, even though they were in an exalted situation and they fell down. They came back by following the prescription for making a comeback. Do you know what that is? What's the prescription for making a full comeback from a horrendous fall down? Chanting what?
What do you mean?
How often?
Every
constantly. So Prabhupada gives it in the verse Sri Prem Pavati Dharmatma Shashvat Chantim Nagachati. The prescription for those who fall down is to constantly chant the holy name. And I've seen those who have fallen down who sincerely it was an accident. They didn't mean to. They were overcome because of their past samskars. And what did they do? They took the prescription, which is chant constantly, 64 rounds, 108 rounds a day, and so forth, and made full comebacks. Anyway, my points are that if you're going to talk rate, you have to talk about it scientifically and what is historically over time and so forth. And that I think that if you looked at it, that you would see that, you know, those coming from a culture that had no acquaintance with, you know, Vaishnavism, Krishna consciousness, and so forth, and people were, you know, freshly in the process, although they attain some liberated position, if they're not careful, they may be more prone to the influence of their past. That's why in most sampradayas, when they pick an acharya or something like that, they pick him from childhood, like in the Shankaracharya line. They look at his chart 50 times, 100 times, you know, it's like, you sure this one's okay? And then they train him from a very early age, and under those scientific conditions, you know, nurturing, controlling, obviously there's going to be a better chance. Yes.
I was thinking that I'm not trying to degrade these other sampradayas, but the very fact that many of these sampradayas have a lot of insistence on being born a brahmana, that itself seems to be a kind of fall down from the actual standards of Varnashrama, where Krishna says that Varna is based on Chaturvarna Maya system, Guna Karma Vibhagasa, and they are actually relying on the contrary so much on birth. That itself is a fall down from the standards.
Wow, that's a powerful argument. And that's kind of what's being pointed out here also. And Prahlad Maharaj brings it out. Vipradvishad gunayutar aravinda nava parara vinda vimukat swapachambarishtam manyetar arpita mano vachanehitarta pranam punati sakulam natuburi manaha. He said that if somebody's born as a dog eater, if he's a devotee, if he has that fragrance of pure devotion, he can deliver not just himself, but his whole family. And Prabhupada points out that means he can deliver people all over the world. But if a person is born, has all the brahminical qualifications, but he's averse to the devotional service, then he can't deliver even his own self. I mean, you could just as easily argue, you know, that look at what some of these converted mleches and, you know, low-born people have done for the world. What have other sampradayas done? You know, Prabhupada converted some people who, you know, were living in trees naked. And then, you know, a year later they were like, you know, wearing a Brahmin thread and so forth. You know, that's his mercy. And that's the mercy of the process. It's the efficacy of the process. And some of those people ended up traveling all over the world and converting hundreds and thousands of people to Vaishnava and still continue to do so. So when you see the electricity coming through, you can just as easily, you know, say, you know,
yeah,
look
because,
at the...
Sometimes, I mean, I totally agree because that's what we see and experience. But sometimes what they say is, because Prabhupada's books is the hope, because even India is falling down to that level these days, so that's the only hope. We are sure about that. But these staunch devotees, like sometimes if they see that, like they have changed and everything, but it's so difficult because there are so many intricacies that one is not exposed to from childhood. And even if a small thing happens, like for example, one moved the book with the leg or something like that, like the small gestures which are considered very high in the so-called Brahmanical cultures in India. So they say, oh, see, what is the use of all this? They don't know even the small thing. So in that sense, it's so difficult for us to go and tell that that's a very small thing to overlook. But then they put the thing, they demean the greatness of the Vaishnavas that they, from where they have grown so much. So how do we...
Well, one thing is that devotees should be trained to know the culture and to be careful and to not offend the sensibilities of others. And at the same time, those who are overly dependent on rules and regulations and these other kinds of things can be understood, as this is the exact context here. They become proud of the fact that they follow all these rules and regulations and so forth, but they don't actually see the essence behind them. The brahmanas who are performing sacrifice after realizing that they had been falsely proud and ignoring Krishna and Balaram, and that their wives, who didn't know anything about all these principles, basically, I mean, actually they did, but supposedly they were inferior. When they heard about Krishna Balaram, they went to the forest, immediately surrendered to them, and became glorified. And afterwards, those brahmanas said, the hell with all our regulations and all these little minutiae that we follow, because they're meaningless. They don't, if they don't connect us to Krishna and pure devotional service, they don't lead anywhere. Lavanya and then Bali?
I just wanted to add a little thought to the discussion, because when she started talking, I thought of what Srila Prabhupada said about there may be many stars in the sky, but all I want is one moon, because it will light up the whole world. And the beauty of any parampara is its ability to generate acharyas, to keep the line going. Without Krishna's mercy, a parampara does not continue. We may have great speakers in various lines, very many acharyas as of date that are amazingly good with a lot of scriptures. They have great backing. They're perfect in what they're doing as themselves. But very few of our sampradayas can claim to regenerate the way ISKCON does, to see acharyas come generation to generation, and each that stands on the shoulders of the other stands on his own weight. You know, they regenerate so beautifully, no matter where they come from. I think the very fact that we see acharyas come generation to generation, and to me that is the biggest miracle of ISKCON, that I see an acharya and I see Srila Prabhupada stand right behind him. And you know, I can see that flow. Anybody who walks into ISKCON and takes up the process and commits their heart and soul to the understanding of that process will realize that this process has regenerated itself. The flow, the connection is so strong. And that is the beauty of a parampara. So I think that everything else is secondary when it comes to the fact that ISKCON grows. It grows from generation to generation.
Thank you. It
is the most prolific. And the younger generation absorbs ISKCON so easily. I mean, I grew up in a Brahminical community. I grew up around everything and I took it for granted. We have not learned to value it. I could have been a dog eater and I could have grown up that way too. It makes no difference to me because I never valued what I had. But the day our eyes open, the day we meet somebody, you know, who can bless us with that little bija of faith, that is the day we actually grow. And if a parampara can do that for you, if it can spread itself wide enough to offer this opportunity to so many, then that is the right way to look at a parampara.
Thank you very much. Very nice.
So,
Bali and then Damodar.
Just I wanted to, what Vitthal Prabhu mentioned about that the Brahminical, you know, what is the value of the birth. But depends on if you go through the Tretaya Yuga, when a person placed his petitions to Lord Ramchandra that my son is dead, even though I am 50 years or whatsoever age is, so it doesn't really, Ramchandra meditated there is something contrary going on, that's what his son died in an early age, and then lately found out that a Shudra who is doing a severe austerities, chanting Vedic mantras and doing, then he chopped off his head without any argument. So in that case, somebody can argue, oh, he's chanting, anybody can chant, he's chanting, that's a good thing. But based on the age, like Tretaya and Satyuga, there are certain principles, certain particular process has to be followed. But in the Kali Yuga, when Lord Chaitanya mentioned Kalo Shudra Sambhava, then it is applicable to those who are Brahmins. Even in the same purport, it has been said that there are many demons who will take birth in the Brahmin families and really devastate the whole scenario. So that means that the whole devotional service or the bhakti bhav will be also destroyed by the prominence of the existing, the Kali Yuga Brahmins. Not all, but many of them had been born like Dvijabandhu and devaluing the whole system. So one has to really see from a different perspective that what others say to us, but rather than we can say, same Vallabhacharya when you're talking, when he was arguing, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him that he was arguing on the Sridhar Swami. Sridhar Swami is some purport which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is mentioning and he was not even accepting. Then Mahaprabhu gave a very strong statement, Sridhara Jainamani Beshyataramani. Means whoever doesn't really follow Sridhar, I just consider a prostitute. So in that way, you know, if we can see how Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu really gave this parampara, our principles which has been coming down, and we should value. There are many, even Sri Sampradaya, they do not even follow Radha Krishna. They don't say that Golok Vrindavan is the real dham. That doesn't mean that they have the highest knowledge or we have to follow that highest authoritative standard. And they also don't consider Lord Chaitanya as God. They consider him as a saintly person. So all the things if you say, then why you have to really rely on their statement, not rely on our Acharya's statement? So that should be, you know, our standard of faith, which should be developed. And definitely we don't need to neglect or devalue, but they have their own standard way of thinking. That's the one way of thinking.
Thank you, Bali.
Yeah, I will like to focus back on what, you know, we were talking about on our parampara. I think one note I'll say, I'm not qualified to comment anything on Sri Sampradaya and all, but when I see, like, say, for example, when the temple of Vedic planetarium and all will come up, like, we're talking about 30 years of our movement, and such beautiful things are just starting and they will get manifested. Already, Krishna Balaram temple in Vrindavan, like, look at what Srila Prabhupada has done to the deity standards of deity worship, correct? And it's just a start of our movement. I am hopeful that and praying to Lord Gauranga that once TOVP comes up and other things are coming up, you know, people will look at us actually. Look at Lord Mani Sri Sampradaya, people are coming and joining ISKCON movement and following our practices and other things. So, just leave it at that. Prabhu, if you allow, what you are reading, I have some pictures of that. Can we show, like, where exactly Rupa Goswami was instructed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Just 10 pictures.
It's right there.
Yeah. So these are the footprints of Lord Gauranga Mahaprabhu at the place where Rupa Goswami and Anupam were preached for 10 days. So this is in a place called Dashashmit Ghat. Actually, reading by Prabhuji. Prabhu, go next. And this is a you know, confirmation that from ISKCON that this is the place where it's called Rupa Siksha Sthali, place where Rupa Goswami was instructed. Next, please. Now this is where the tree, where below this is the right spot, and you can see it needs a lot of love and attention, and especially it needs to be brought under ISKCON if Prabhupada desires. So this is something. You know, I'm praying every time I go to Allahabad. I'm born and brought up in Allahabad. That if we can get it, it's absolutely not in our control, right? And this is the place where all that 10 days of instructions happened. This is confirmation that it's called Brahmeshwara Mahadeva Temple. And in Hindi, you can read, if you zoom in, that this is a place where Lord Gauranga instructed and gave Diksha to Rupa Goswami, and all this, you know, coming up of instruction. This is the river Ganges. You can see, you know, Dashashmedh Ghat. Actually, Dashashmedh Ghat is in two places. One is in Varanasi and one in Allahabad. So this is the Allahabad version of Dashashmedh Ghat. Actually, I'm so foolish. First time when I read Bhakti Siddhan, you know, Brahma Samhita, and there Bhakti Siddhan Saraswati Thakur says Dashashmet in Varanasi, and I was thinking maybe there's a print mistake, but later I didn't knew there was a Dashashmet Ghat in Allahabad, being you know, until, and this is where Srila Prabhupada was initiated. This is called Rupa Gaudiya Mutt. Prabhu, if you can go back, I just wanted to show the Bindu Madhav deities. Yeah, just go on the, keep on going the back. Yeah, there's few more. Okay, I should have shown you some Srila Prabhupada home in Allahabad. Yeah, this is the deities, Bindu Madhav deities, which Gauranga Mahaprabhu used to morning go every day, then preach and teach Rupa Goswami, and then have Prasad at Vallabha Thakur's, Vallabha Acharya's residence. In fact, they offered to, for, you know, I was very unqualified. The priest in Vallabha Acharya was saying, okay, why don't you start doing services there? Like, this is 7-10 years back. And obviously, you know, Prabhu, go back actually, do the, yeah, this is again confirmed. This is the RL, what Prabhu, you are reading the village, 1 kilometer on the east of Yamuna. This is the residence of Vallabha Acharya. Prabhu, go on the right, yeah? More. Yeah, I'll show you Srila Prabhupada residence and the Paryag pharmacy, where Srila Prabhupada used to, yeah, this is the house of Srila Prabhupada, where he stayed for 36 years. It was sold by his sons, was into legal litigation. I started ISKCON 2005. So this is somewhere around 2006, 2007. I tried to save it, but didn't have money, didn't have power to connect with management of ISKCON. Now it's demolished and a shopping mall is there. So, and go ahead, Prabhu. So this is another view of Srila Prabhupada's residence. This is where the Prayag pharmacy was. If you go, nobody knows now. So you need to have a person. This is a very high traffic area. It's a bank runs. Prabhu, you can do next and I can show you the gate. So this is the gate. Please go and touch this. Srila Prabhupada definitely would have been opening and closing this gate every day. So now there's a bank called Cooperative Bank, and hopefully, if devotees pray around, and this is ISKCON of Allahabad, you see the Yamuna just flowing on the background, and he's a handicapped devotee, and he actually helped me to trace around. Not many people actually know in the city of all these details. Thank you.
This is called individual, spontaneous, and voluntary service. And it's very nice. It added another dimension, and so did the comments of all the devotees today, especially regarding sampradaya. It's an important topic. Prabhupada once described it as or compared it to political parties. Like in America, we have Republicans and Democrats, and both of them are working for the betterment of the United States, but they may have different opinions about how to do it and what the ultimate goal is and so forth. And so he said similarly, the various sampradayas, they all are aiming at Vishnu, and they have, you know, various ideas about how to worship and, you know, how to achieve the goal and so forth. But their interest is the same, and there's a oneness there. And you'll notice, too, that there are, in descriptions that Prabhupada gives about the life of different acharyas, and when he's talking about Balabhacharya, he said one person says this, one person says that, maybe like this, maybe like that. There are also various opinions about similar subjects or the same subject sometimes, that one must accommodate through triangulation and understanding Shastra and what the acharyas have said and so forth, and the method to follow them. And ultimately, the light has to come through. The juice has to be flowing. Otherwise, what is the use of it? And one can see if, as Lavanya was pointing out, if there's life and people are getting life from it, obviously something's coming through, which is an important thing to see. And in a prolific way, from the Madhva Gaudiya, Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya, there are an amazing array of people who are being elevated to Krishna consciousness. In the Bhagavatam, we hear Kirata Hunandra Pulinda Pulkasha Abhira Shumba Yavana Kasadaya. Yene cha papa yada pashaya shaya shudyanti tasmai pravavishnave namaha. That Shukadeva Goswami says anybody who comes in contact with this bona fide process will come to the perfectional stage. And then he names all the kinds of people who are specifically not from Brahminical culture or from Varnashram culture at all. They're outside that system completely. But he says all of them can attain perfection because of the power of Lord Vishnu that comes through the pure devotees. If they're just connected properly, then they will get that. And one must be careful, because it's not just because one's connected to the process or initiated into the Sampradaya that one's success is guaranteed. But as Prabhupada says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, unless one reads all of my books, he'll take to eating and sleeping and fall down again into the material world. I think about that a lot. What does it take to read all of Prabhupada's books? It takes great effort. There are a lot of books, actually. Well, Damodar is shaking his head, but actually, you know, to actually go through the whole Bhagavatam, the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita, Nectar Devotion, Bhagavad Gita. Nowadays, there's a little more emphasis on these things, but I don't think that there's, you know, a large percentage of people have done that. And it's not just that you go through them once; it's that you should go through, you should know them, and be intimately connected with them, always. And otherwise there's a chance that one can fall down. And one can fall down coming from any culture. It doesn't matter. And as you pointed out, Vittal Prabhu, thinking oneself to be qualified because of being born in a Brahmin family is a kind of fall down. It is a significant fall down, which is what Lord Chaitanya is trying to point out here in this context as well. So we've gotten a start on the road to the actual instructions that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave to Rupa Goswami, but I think there's so much value in hearing the whole chapter all the way through, isn't it? Yes. And we'll continue one way or the other to hear this chapter, and we'll come to the instructions very specifically that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave to Rupa Goswami. Any last questions or points? Yes, sir? I don't know, but there's Wednesday, and maybe we can do some phone calls before then too, see what we can do to finish this chapter. It's nice to complete it, isn't it? Any last comments or questions? And there's two text messages. Let's hear them, because we're 2 minutes over time.
I mean, these are all. I just wanted to mention names. That Shyamalangi Mataji and Govind Charan Prabhu had also cited some verses.
Tell us at least what they cited. You don't have to.
Yeah, so Shyamalangi Mataji was quoting from Bhagavad Gita 5.19. I don't have that verse with me. And Govind Charan Prabhu's verse, I think, got covered. He was 5.8, Neva Kinchit Karomiti.
Pardon me, who did?
Govind Charan Prabhu.
Oh, Govind Charan.
Yes.
Nice. Okay, so 5.19.
5.8 from Bhagavad Gita.
5.19, please. What is the verse?
Ihaiva ter jita sargo yesham samye sthitam mana nirdosham hi samam brahma tasmat brahmani te sthitha. Those whose minds are established in sameness and equanimity have already conquered the conditions of birth and death. They are flawless like Brahman, and thus they are already situated in Brahman.
That's a really good citation, Shyamalangi. Thank you. And let's hear the other one from Govindacharan. Naiva Kinchit, he gave that from the fifth chapter. Fifth chapter, a gold mine for verses like that. Okay, so now we're going to have a Guru Puja for our founder Acharya's Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So we'll put away all the books. Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, hey! Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman.